You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, December 12th, 2014. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live. Steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America. Downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, it's Casual Friday, folks. I'm wearing Zumbas. I've gone sockless just for the moment. And joining me will be, as on every Friday, or most Fridays, the great Cliff Schechter to look back on the wonderful week that was. Also on the program today, the comedian, the Obama bot, Andy Kindler, will be joining us, ostensibly to give me a film recommendation over the weekend, and hopefully to complain about Marc Maron. Also on the program today, last night, late at night. Actually, I think it was closer to about 9:30 or 10. The House voted to pass the Cromnibus. This is a bill it's a combination of the omnibus spending bill, budget bill, as Matt pulls down the music. The omnibus spending bill, basically the budget for the year, but also a continuing resolution because Homeland Security is going to be up for another vote in 3 months in terms of their budget because of the nativists in the Republican Party. A particularly interesting development. We have a situation where the Republicans larded up a spending bill with some policy bills. I mean, bills that are amendments that you should really be debating in and of themselves because they have broad implications beyond spending. And in fact, in many instances, had very little to do with spending. The Democrats found themselves fighting against the Obama administration and a portion of their own corporatist faction in fighting particularly, and I would say this is where the fight came from. Over the reversal of a Dodd-Frank provision which called for certain risky derivatives to be traded by banks in subsidiaries that were not covered by federally insured, I should say. The language of this bill in and of it that was attached as a rider to the budget bill was literally written by Citibank. Literally written by Citibank. So it just gives you a sense of which way the winds are blowing. So there's a, you know, hopefully we have some people in the Obama administration who will be getting a nice job at Citibank or some other bank when their run is over. All right, we'll talk more about this with Cliff, but I wanted to bring that up. Also, another story of Verizon's loose lips on an investor call shows that the whole argument that net neutrality will inhibit the rollout and the development of high-speed networks is bullcrap. And I will get to that story about deportations, probably. I hope. But first, before I do, I want to remind you folks, this show relies exclusively, not exclusively, but about 99%. In fact, we'll show you the 1% in a moment. 99% on your support, on listener support. We set it up. We could have set it up as just donations or, but the way that we set it up is memberships. You get the first 40 minutes, and on Fridays, that usually ends up being an hour and 20 minutes free. And as a bonus to those who contribute to the show and keep it alive and keep it going day in, day out, we give an extra 50 minutes, which usually this week turns into like another 75 minutes. I don't know. We do too much.
It's almost like you're getting another show.
Yeah, I actually think that we actually put out too much and it inhibits our growth. I actually think that's what I think it is. We're just too good. So please, if you can support the program, do so. And maybe we can develop some mechanism where you can actually just listen to the chunks of the show that you want to listen to so that it can be smaller, so that you can digest this. It's like people coming in for a snack. We give them a 17-course meal. It's almost too much every day. So it's just pennies a day, though, to support this program. So please do. You can do so at majority.fm or jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, of course, if you buy crap from Amazon, buy it through our link at majorityreportkickback.com. We get a kickback. You notice nothing different. Justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Coupon code majority, get 10% off. This episode of The Majority Report is sponsored by Bombas. I mentioned this yesterday on the program, and this was the most exciting sponsor that we've ever gotten, according to Matt. Bombas is basically, they sell socks. And I know people don't generally think about socks that much, but you would if you buy the crap ones that I have been bought for the better part of my adult life, and they're full of holes. Well, Bombas, you get a good-looking, incredibly well-built sock. They ship it right to you. It's free shipping if you get two pairs. And they also have like four packs and six packs. And on top of that, for every pair of socks you buy, they donate a pair of socks to someone who needs them. So they've donated 150,000 pair of socks to homeless shelters in a little more than a year. So they fit well, they're comfortable, they look good, and they're going to last. And if you go to Bombas, bombas.com/majority right now, you get a choice. You either get one pair of socks free, or you get 20% off your entire order if you buy a bunch of socks. So that's bombas.com/majority. Head there now. Get your free sock or your 20% off a bunch of socks. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Cliff Schechter.
Set my soul on fire.
We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome to the program, as we do every Friday, the person who is the subject of this little ditty.
Cliff Schachter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schachter, Libertas LLC.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it's Cliff Schachter. Hello, Cliff.
Why, hello there, Samuel. How are you?
I am doing well. Let me raise your volume a slight bit and beep.
Oh, we wouldn't want people to think I'm quiet and respectful, would we?
No, because we all know that it's. You know what? It's got me. I'm a little bit
it's
of
a cod.
Yeah,
a cade.
This week has been just. I don't know. It's been enraging between. Seeing the Cretans come out and justify and rationalize the torture, and then seeing what went down last night in the House has gotten me pretty angry. I want to talk about this Cromibus.
Yeah.
We can talk about the torture stuff a little bit later if we have time. I've certainly talked about it quite a bit over the past couple of days. But
that surprises me.
And yeah, exactly. And I think I'm a little bit even more, I should warn you, I'm a little bit more annoyed than normal because
Ooh.
Indy Mike, who I think listeners of this program are familiar with, who
right.
is my my friend's friend, and I'm friends with him, although
okay.
He's annoying me so much, who Uh-oh. Pretends that it's always about, you know, that it's he calls himself an independent and he gets all his information from Ann Coulter. He's just so upset about the hypocrisy of Elizabeth Warren and Nancy Pelosi to actually try and shut down the government when they were so outraged that the Republicans had tried to do it before. And I've tried to explain to him that this guy doesn't even – it's not even process over substance with him. This is politeness over process over substance. If you were going to make a process argument about this, you'd say, hey, you know, we shouldn't be including in a budget bill some broad policy measures that need to be actually debated and are deserving of debate as opposed to just being shoved in there by lobbyists at the last minute. And
right.
And look, there's problems with not just that aspect of it as well. I mean, but there's other bills. But we should just say, just to round this up, and then I will unleash you.
Unleash me, baby. Let me go.
Well,
I'm ready to kick some ass over this.
Last night, it was the vote was 219 to 206. 219 prevailing with 162 Republicans voting yes, 57 Democrats voting yes, 67 Republicans voting no, 139 Democrats voting no. The no votes had been largely at least, if not inspired by Elizabeth Warren in the Senate, but certainly promoted by Elizabeth Warren in the Senate. So have a crack at it before I go run down all the specific details here.
Would you like me to have a crack at the whole thing or the claim that this is hypocrisy of some sort?
Whatever you feel comfortable with.
Well, I don't know Indy Mike. I got to be honest with you. I don't know who he is. Apparently, he's quite popular on the show, it seems. So he's sort of your independent conservative calling himself independent guy. He's your muse of sorts. Mm.
So sometimes.
Yes. I mean, you know, as far as I can tell here, this isn't about Elizabeth Warren, and I think you sort of just said this in your own way, but it's not about Elizabeth Warren and Nancy Pelosi wanting to shut down the government. It's not about them being spoiled brats, which is really kind of what Republican governing, and I don't even like using that word because they haven't done that, has been for, you know, the better part of the 21st century. It's about the fact that, as you just said, there are some serious measures in here, and you're going to bring them up, you know, having to do with derivatives trading, having to do with campaign finance reform, and other important aspects of it, too. It has to do with cutting funding for the EPA, although I guess that's a budget matter that you could just mm-hmm. go with and vote for against your, you know, because you have to. And you know, this is just a game that people on the right play, you know, still throwing bones of sorts to their socially conservative base. I mean, they get some stuff from them, but in the end, you know, the just at this point in time, to look at where we are and that the entire, you know, apparatus of the Republican Party essentially can unite, because the only people in the Republican Party who voted against this thing thought it didn't go far enough, that it wasn't actually a crappy enough bill. That the entire, basically, you know, I think only 18 Republicans voted against it, so most of the Republican Party voted for this thing. And
67 Republicans voted against it. I think
those
votes were more of a function of how can you allow President Obama's imperial presidency to continue when he is issuing these dictatorial executive actions regarding immigration.
And that's what I can't stand. And just for any Republican to, with a straight face, bring up hypocrisy, right? Any Republican who sits there and looks
at he's an independent.
Well, yeah, he's full of shit is what he is. Any Republican who can try to look you in the face and or independent conservative who can say, oh, my God, you know, food stamps, it makes the turns lazy people. They're like animals. It makes people lazy. So they just sit around and enjoy, and, you know, rock and roll off the government dole. But going to big banks and saying to them, we're going to remove a provision here that makes it so you can't use taxpayer money to basically go around trading derivatives, essentially saying, we'll back you up. Go ahead, make any trade you want, lose any money you want, we'll bail you out. So that doesn't make derivatives traders, that doesn't make them dependent upon government. Again, it's only people who need to eat who become dependent upon government, not people that rip it off constantly. And Obama's executive presidency, because we didn't get signing statements and executive actions from President Bush all the time, and we didn't get one-party government from Bush essentially ramming things through. I mean, I'm so sick of all the ridiculousness. I, again, like you, have been critical whenever I feel it's necessary, and that's been quite often of President Obama, of Democrats, of many people. But this unbelievable game that they play on the right where they pretend that Obama's the reason people aren't getting along, Obama's the reason why it's come to this, we have to do this with immigration instead of a party that refuses to govern, a party that's still obsessed with a health care bill that's based on the damn thing the Heritage Foundation came up with in the 1990s. I mean, you know, there's just a point where it's like, will you guys just shut the fuck up and do something positive and try and be a part of the solution instead of just sitting around constantly bitching about everything? Okay, I had my say. You go ahead, Sam.
All right. Well, we're going to have to do some heavy editing on today's program. Now, Cliff, okay, let's go through this.
I apologize for anybody who has to spend any extra time.
That's all right. It's I think it's your FCC license that is the
That's what I figured. You guys don't respect my SEC license. All right. Do whatever you need to do.
So, all right. So let's get to that first point. Okay. You know, the difference, and you mentioned it, there's $60 million cut from the EPA. There's another provision, though, that is in this bill that I'll talk about, I'll list off in a moment, that actually has to do with the Clean Water Act. And so you cut $60 million from the EPA, that inhibits its enforcement capacity. Of course, this is what Republicans do. They don't care. In fact, that's not a question of they don't care. They want these externalities by business to be borne by the rest of us, be borne by people with asthma, or be borne by people with cancer, whoever it is, drinking poor or not being able to drink their drinking water. On the other side of the ledger, that is, we're going to throw in bills or amendments that actually deal with policy. You are inhibiting the Clean Water Act from being extended to smaller waterways, which basically end up being these sort of receptacles for all sorts of pesticides runoffs. And you're not protecting those waterways, which feed in to the larger waterways from where we get our water. It also cuts almost $350 million, almost 3% of the IRS budget. And this is just stunning. First off, we know that every dollar cut from the IRS budget increases the deficit by $7. Now, I'm not a big deficit hawk. People know that. Bush and Chains knows that, who listens to this program. But It makes no sense. I mean, every dollar that you put into the IRS, you get $7 back in terms of enforcement procedures. And so in this instance, not only will the IRS not be able to deal with that whole 503c1 controversy, right, but you're also basically telling wealthy people, hey, guess what? You're going to have a moratorium on an IRS that's going to audit you for the next couple of years. So enjoy.
You might as well just rip them off and go for it. And that's the important thing here. And again, this is why I can't stand the hypocrisy charge. You know, we knew that, as you know, as people know who know anything about healthcare, for example, if you treat people in a preventative manner, you're going to end up paying less than you would pay down the road, right? But of course, you know, Republicans who supposedly care about the deficit would rather that we don't give people health care and that it ends up blowing up the deficit. It's sort of like, you know, Republicans claim that they care about the deficit, but giving people the death penalty ends up costing God knows how much more money with appeals and court process and the rest. But of course, they're still for it. I mean, it's just like basically in every way they could possibly be for spending more money, they are, while claiming that they care about the deficit. And it's just amazing to me.
It's ironic that you said that about the Affordable Care Act, because they also cut payments to the Independent Payment Advisory Board, which is part of the Affordable Care Act, which basically keeps medical costs growth down. All right, but let's get back to – so we have this the two big issues for the Democrats were and I would say the first one is the biggest one, and the second one is sort of secondary. But the first one was, like you say, letting banks trade all sorts of derivatives under subsidiaries that are insured by the federal government. That's – I mean, we know what that involves. That's basically saying – to these banks, we're going to subsidize your trading, because what we're by subsidizing it, we're doing this. We're basically saying to those parties that you trade with that we're backstopping you. So it is basically going to provide a safer bet for those people who trade derivatives with you. And it's going to do two things. One, it provides you that subsidy because you're going to get more money for those derivatives because they're safer.
Right.
And two, it's going to encourage you to take riskier bets because, you know, it's going to be backstopped. And
right.
So
it's always wonderful when somebody else is taking care of that for you.
Indeed. And then the second part was a 10 times increase in the amount of money that can be given directly to national parties, either Democratic or Republican National Committee. Now, understand, the reason why the Republicans wanted to do this was because they are afraid of the outside groups and the billionaires that they've unleashed through attacking other aspects of campaign finance reform.
Right.
They, you know,
and also Mitch McConnell at this point is taking a look at what the map looks like in 2016 and is scared out of his mind because they've got to reelect like right-wing loons in states, you know, like Wisconsin and Pennsylvania and places like that, New Hampshire, a lot of bluish states, blue purple states. You know, they've got Mark Kirk up in Illinois. I mean, they're in for a world of hurt, most likely in 2016 with presidential type turnout. So, you know, they want to do whatever. I mean, we don't have enough money in the system. Let's get more in there.
Well, I mean, the bottom line is you know, it just reinforces what I've been saying in terms of the establishment. Part of the Republican Party and the, I don't know, you want to call them the Tea Party wing of the Republican Party. Basically, these are just two different companies in the same industry. And so
right.
Now you have if a donor gave $32,500, I think it is the maximum that you can give to a national party this year. That same donor would now be able to give another approximately $290,000. If I have these numbers,
I mean, so $32,000 clearly wasn't enough.
Right. So now you can give $300 and something like $20,000 or $25,000 a year, because democracy is beautiful. So those are the two big issues that had basically rallied Democrats to vote against it. There's other aspects in this cromnibus that are just horrible. You have drivers now. Employers are now allowed to make their drivers drive 82 hours a week, truck drivers. That raises it by, I think, about 17 hours. Is that it? I mean, can you imagine the addition?
After we've had some of these high-profile accidents?
Yes.
it's insane, right? I mean, what's his name? Who was on the comedian,
right?
African American comedian. I can't.
Tracy Morgan.
Thank you. I couldn't think of his. I mean, that's a high profile example, but we've weakened so many of those standards already.
Well, it's dangerous for people on the roads. It's dangerous for the truckers. It's also relentlessly exhausting for the truckers.
Sure, it's not good for anybody.
I mean, can you imagine?
Companies making money.
Someone says to you, and because this is not obviously mandated, but what trucking company is not going to take advantage of this? I mean, you're going to get pushed out of the business if you can't do that extra 17 hours a week. Contemplate that for a moment, folks. If someone added 17 hours to your work week. Stunning. And that one, I think, came from Susan Collins. We had Pell Grants for college students will be cut. And the money is going towards the loan servicing companies who have been shown to be incredibly corrupt at worst, just horrible partners in this, and a complete waste of money at best. And this was pushed by Tom Harkin as he was exiting. God knows why he was doing that. One can only imagine. There's going to be you're allowing Blue Cross and Blue Shield to allow to count what they call quality improvements as a measure towards their mandatory health spending to maintain that 80-20% ratio on health insurance. There's a provision in there that was set bipartisan provision. To eliminate backdoor searches by the NSA that has been removed. I mentioned the EPA with the Clean Water Act. There's also it attacks nutrition standards in schools. It cuts money for women with infants and children. I mean, this is just
that's what you do when you're pro-life.
And so then the Obama administration, I keep wanting to call them the Bush administration, the Obama administration is out there getting Jamie Dimon to make phone calls to Democratic congresspeople to pressure them to vote for this bill because it's got this provision in there that's going to enrich these bankers more because God knows they need the help.
Yes. If anyone has been hurt by recent years, it's bankers. And I think we need to all stop for a second to sort of maybe a moment of silence. To try and sort of think positive thoughts about them and help them during these difficult times.
Indeed. I mean, it's the holidays.
I mean, there's just a point where it just gets like, it gets so disgusting. You're just sort of like, really? I mean, can you find more ways to throw every goodie you can imagine? You guys who claim that you're all about, that you're all about equality, fairness, freedom, you're against big government, whatever. But in the end, this may be a form of deregulating, whatever. But in the end, it's what we're doing is we're giving them subsidies because that's what it turns into. I mean, what you're doing is you're saying to banks, do whatever you want. We'll be there to cover the bill. And we know how that worked out. We know how that's worked out many times, but we know particularly how that worked out in 2008. And it's like, really, after that, even at this point, how much can you guys give them without feeling any shame?
And look, we should be clear here. I mean, this has been it is the case that 139, 140 Democrats voted against this. But those 57 Democrats made it possible. The Obama administration. I don't know if it is the case that Standy Hoyer was out there whipping. My understanding was that there was some conflicting information in that regard. But let's be honest. I mean, the Democrats, Obama completely just sold the Democrats down the river. I mean, that's the reality of this. This is setting the tone for how this is going to go in the future. And one could argue, and I suppose there's arguments out there, and maybe Cliff, I will, if you want to argue the devil's advocate just for the sake of some type of balance on the program today.
I'd like this to be a more fair and balanced program. So let me tell you why you're wrong about everything, Sam.
Okay, please.
No, you're right. But the problem here is, as somebody who's involved, with the kind of the gun violence prevention community, I know there were some good people that wanted to vote for this because there was a lot more money put in for the NICS background check system, $73 million, in fact. And that's been a big problem for, with background checks that we even do, that some of these guys, that the records fall through. And so I know there are people who genuinely were, you know, are pushing for this and were doing it for the right reasons. To me, overall, clearly there's so much bad stuff in here that even as somebody who feels as strongly as I do about the issue of gun violence, there's no way I could vote for this if it were me, and I think it's a terrible bill. I'm just trying to say there are some people who are more focused, and as you know, a lot of people in the gun violence community or gun violence prevention community are there because they've lost somebody they love. And so I understand, I would never sort of say tag everybody with, you know, or paint everyone with that brush and say that, you know, anybody supporting it is doing it for the wrong reasons. There are some people that I think legitimately see something good in this thing. But overall, you're right. I mean, it's terrible, and there's so many bad parts about it, and it's just a reminder of everything we've been through. It's sort of preemptively negotiating, giving in to people on the right, letting things show up in here that should never be in here, just to, I suppose, get along, because that seems to be that's the only thing that has ever been the most important thing to the Obama administration, is that they actually pass stuff, which is, you know, if things are terrible, I'd rather you pass nothing, ever. It bothers me, too, because, you know, one of the few things I think conservatives, you know, get right, although I don't know they really follow up on what they say, but at least, which is, you know, when people do something bad, if you do not punish them, right, if there's no consequences, they That's will right. do it again.
That's right.
Excuse me. And we basically just, you know, watched Mitch McConnell, you know, and John Boehner and others, right after President Obama was elected, get together, say, we're not going to let anything happen, tear the whole government down. And now, the minute they take over, you're giving in to them and letting them have something like this.
Right. And, of course, let me just explain this to the dynamic to people. They haven't obviously taken over yet, but the idea would have been if we had just done a three-month or a six-month continuing resolution and this came up again in February or in March, April, May, and there had to be another vote here, the budget would have been worse. But, I mean, now, with that said, that's possibly true. But one of the reasons why the Republicans wanted this so badly is that they also know that they have their own crew of lunatics that are coming in, and
that's
that they would not have been able to get the 162 votes that they got, and they wouldn't have been able to get those 57 votes from the Democrats, because many of those Democrats in that 57 are going to be ones who are leaving
right.
because they got the blue dogs got voted out in favor of the rabid red meat right-wing Republicans.
And why'd they get voted out? Exactly for doing stuff like this.
Well, put that aside for a moment. That may or may not be the case, but the reality is that the Republicans needed to pass this, or at least the Republican leadership needed to pass this as much as the Democratic leadership. And here's the thing. That provision about Wall Street is not one that fed the beast. In other words, I don't really know, my presumption is they don't really care. But it's not like those people who were upset and weren't going to vote for this because Obama's an imperial president and going on about the immigration thing. It's not like they could take this provision about Dodd-Frank and bring it back to their constituents and say, but at least we made it easier for banks to trade risky derivatives on your taxpayer backing. They're not going back. That's not a get, you know, so that dynamic was not in play. This was clearly one of those situations where that was all sort of a charade to get this in the bill and to ram it through. And so my point being that if the Republicans were faced with not passing anything and having to push a continuing resolution into the next year, that this provision could go. And if they wanted to avoid that, they wouldn't have lost any votes. And so the White House, by capitulating and actually lobbying and pushing Democrats, I think, really brought this about more than anything. I really do think that's the case.
I mean, they literally don't seem to believe in leverage up there. They just seem to believe
Or they got exactly
deal,
what they want. Or they got exactly
deal,
what they want. In other
a
words.
A deal for a deal's sake.
No, I'm not even saying that. That they were perfectly willing. Look, Jamie Dimon is not calling these members of Congress based upon some advice that he got from, the guy who shines his shoes in the bathroom at Chase Bank. No, he did this at the behest of the White House.
No, I mean, yes, that is clearly it, too. I don't know that necessarily, for example, the White House would have wanted to cut funding from the EPA. Maybe about that. Maybe I'm wrong. I guess what I'm saying is I never find one explanation of Obama's actions to be sufficient. I find it's part of it is corporatism, and part of it is because if he gets a deal, he'd rather not fight, even if it's a deal, you know, as long as it's a deal that makes people happy, he needs to be happy and it goes through. It's not worth fighting over the EPA. It's not worth fighting over campaign finance reform. So, yeah, my guess is a few of the provisions that are in there, not my guess, I'm almost sure that he supports some of the bad ones. But some of the other ones, to him, are just not worth – he won't stand on that hill and fight.
Look, you know what? I mean, the reality is you're not going to stop the Republicans from cutting the EPA. You're not going to stop them from cutting the IRS. You're not going to stop them from attacking, nibbling at the edges of the Affordable Care Act. You're not going to stop them from doing a lot of this stuff. But this banking thing in particular, I mean, you're not going to stop them from getting, $325,000 from per donor for their net. There are some things
right,
that you
but
just –
you could get a lot more in return for some of that crap.
Well, perhaps. I mean, you know, the argument with the bank derivative is, well, we got more funding for the consumer CFTC, for the Commodities Futures Trading Commission. But you're basically giving them funding to regulate a less amount of regulations. In other words,
exactly.
You know, like, okay.
Like, here's some more money. Oh, by the way, you can't regulate this anymore.
Right. We've given more funds to the cops, but we've also made stealing and killing legal. But they're going to do a much better job of policing jaywalking. You know, I mean, give me a break. God.
And, yeah, it's just –
I'm sorry. I don't mean to be. I'm particularly agitated this week because you also see the Obama Justice Department in a completely separate sphere, if you will. Again, you know, to allow for these CIA officials to lie, to torture. lie to the American public and to lawmakers and to just completely just sit there as the Department of Justice. I mean, it's deafening. The silence is deafening. There's nothing. There's just no accountability for any of it. Not for the lying, not for the torturing, not for any of it. It is just promotions.
That sends exactly the same message. It's sort of like, you know, if you want to send as many bad messages as you can to all the sort of bad actors in this country, we're doing an amazing job of that. Republicans, though, don't worry. There's no price to be paid for 6 years of absolute obstructionism. Bankers, there's no price to be paid for blowing up the economy with deregulation. We had that nice little derivatives thing for a bit, but we're going to go back to the way it was before because clearly things were great before and there weren't any problems. And then, you know, here on torture. I mean, you guys tortured some people, did some horrible things, had some people chained naked in cells, standing up for, 85 hours straight while dunking their head in the water every other minute. That seems pretty – I know we prosecuted the Imperial Japanese Army for that. And I know that when the Soviet Union did that and Khmer Rouge and others, we thought it was terrible. We called it torture. But, you know, when we do it, it's different. That's okay. So you guys shouldn't worry because we're never going to come after you. And, you know, just for a little self-plug for a second, I just had a column of mine come out today in the Daily Beast tying sort of the activities by police officers around the country into what's going on with the CIA. And, you know, that sends the same message to these grand juries saying, nope, don't worry about it. I mean, do we think that we don't have a culture where this stuff sort of, you know, filters down? For lack of a better word, you know, that stuff does trickle down. Money doesn't trickle down economics. Right. But this kind of stuff, when you see people at the top getting away with stuff, and you see that there's going to be no accountability for what you do, and you're giving the police weaponry of war, similar to what we've got people playing on the international stage with and the rest. I mean, you know, you're sort of just saying to everybody, game on. Don't worry, no one's going to ever do anything. It doesn't matter if we have the whole thing videotaped or we have a report. that has all the details, doesn't mean we know exactly who you are, you're still going to get away with it. And, I mean, you know, at some point, are we a country of laws? Because I've lost track if we are or not.
Well, I mean, we used to be. I remember back when you could impeach a president for lying about sex on in a deposition. That's when we were a country of laws. Now it's just, now we've lost that. Maybe it was because of Bill Clinton. Maybe it was because
him or Obama or I don't know. It's definitely liberals or African Americans. Maybe the gays are at fault here. It's always somebody on our side.
Cliffy, I know also that, you know, like you mentioned earlier, you do a lot of work in terms of some type of sensible gun safety laws in this country, gun control. This weekend, I think, marks the second anniversary, is it?
You and I were actually on the radio when that was going on. Because I remember, I never forgot that.
Sandy Hook.
You remember where you are when things like that happen. You know, JFK or the Challenger. Well, I think for our generation, the one before us, this will be one of those things. You and I were talking, and I said, I think towards the end of the show, we'd actually been talking about gun violence. I said, and it seems like there's been another shooting in Connecticut, but we didn't know all the details. And I mean, oh my God, you know, and that's terrible enough. But as that's going on. I'm sitting here in Ohio where the state legislature is now trying to pass a measure that would have reciprocity for concealed carry, which would mean Ohio could, you know, at least Ohio has some rules about who has concealed carry, whereas basically Utah and Texas and a few others have none. And that would allow people in Utah and Texas who get their guns with no training and have committed misdemeanor domestic violence and other things could just bring those guns here. I mean, it's not to say that a lot of things haven't moved in what I would say a positive direction. We won the big referendum in Washington State. Now there's going to be one in Nevada. It got the most signatures of any referendum or any ballot initiative, I should say, that ever turned in. So that'll be on there in 16. There'll probably be a couple others. I mean, there's definitely been some moves in a positive direction, but in all the places that we've allowed the right to fully take over, especially state legislatures, you know, they've learned nothing from this. And we're still dealing with that. And by the way, this week, you know, these crazy open carry groups, it's become a big story that one of these women who was everywhere and was featured prominently, spoke to the media for them, would show up at these things to intimidate people, just shot and killed her husband and stepdaughter, and then drove herself to a mental health facility after that. Oh, so, if you know, that's becoming a big story. So if you think that if anybody even wants to try to slightly believe our favorite Rambos who go around open carrying in places like Kroger, because that's obviously a very dangerous spot. You know, these are the. But if you think for a second that we know that any of these people are mentally sound or aren't criminals or because of our system still riddled with loopholes, there you go. This was one of the most prominent activists in Texas for open carry, who has now murdered her family. I mean, so, you know, it's like everything else. I mean, it seems like I would like to say one step back, two steps forward. I feel like we're doing that on guns right now. But then you look at what happens with cromnibuses and torture, and you just, like, if you add it all up, I don't want to sound distressed, but sometimes it doesn't feel like we're winning.
You got to take maybe a you might have to look at the time frame in centuries. Not so much, maybe.
That's what it is, right?
Years,
the arc
decades.
Of justice.
If you look, right,
you know,
exactly.
As Martin Luther King said, it's very true. I mean, that's the problem, is that, you know, the people knew what smoking was doing, and we found memos as early as the 1950s, maybe 1940s, and it took, another 50 years for us to do anything about it. We know plenty of things are out there hurting people, but there are people on the other side who have lots of money. And now they'll be able to give $300,000 to their favorite party, so that's good too.
Indeed. Cliff Schechter, until next week, which I believe next Friday will be the final Friday of the year.
Wow.
Yeah.
For the show.
No, yeah, there'll be other Fridays in the year.
There's like maybe two more after that.
I think there's two more Fridays after
that. We're taking those two off. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, we're going to be taking basically...
Two in a row, Sam. What are you going to do with
all
that?
Well, it's not two full weeks that we're taking off, but it's very strange this year. Christmas falls in the middle of the week, and then New Year's falls in the middle of the week, and I may have Michael work on New Year's.
I think Michael would like that kind
of thing. That's it. I don't know. We'll see. But Cliff, so we will touch base next week. Contemplate, be reflective of the year.
I will try to be reflective of the year and come back. And I don't want to leave ever with the wrong message, because I feel like I've left the wrong message, which is we all get frustrated and angry about this stuff at times, but never give up. We all, you know, stay out there and keep fighting for what you believe in, because I wouldn't want anybody walking away thinking just because I'm frustrated for a moment, I'm giving up on anything.
All right, Cliffy. All right, we'll talk to you next week. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks a lot, buddy.
Bye.
Bye.
Bloop, bloop. I'm just particularly agitated today. And my agitation, I think, can only be matched by, someone like Andy Kindler. And so, fortunately, we have Andy Kindler on next. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. All right, we are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, like I said before I took a break, I am very agitated today. But I know that on days like this, it's always good to have someone who's more agitated than me, because then it immediately calms me down. And that is why, ladies and gentlemen, I give you a triumphant return to the program. They're always triumphant for him. Andy Kindler. Hello, Andy.
Well, it's hard to follow the up-tempo segment that I just heard. You are really sending people into the weekend with their frown upside down. When you and Cliff get people pumped up, you know what I'm saying? You played the severe disappointment card.
Yes.
Boy, hey, Proops. Don't give up. What did Cliff say at the end? Hey, don't give up. Why not keep fighting? Hey, we can measure this in hundreds of years. Why don't we go with that as a measurement?
That's basically.
The women have the right to vote, you know. Women can vote in many ways. Unbelievable. You guys, if I was doing what you guys were doing, I would pump it up. Keep it up tempo. Keep saying, hey, but on the other hand, that kind of a thing.
So we should have said, like, here's the cromnibus, here's the derivative swap, but on the other hand, you know, that kind of thing.
You should have said, look, we love Obama. He has a thing. We can't know everything that's going on with him. He has a plan. We must trust him. That kind of a thing. That's what I'd like to hear.
There it is. It is Andy's deep, abiding Obama botanist coming
Absolutely.
To the fore. You really?
Absolutely.
I mean, you really do. Do you? Let me ask you a question. I want you to be serious. I know that you were born.
You've seen some of my stand-up, then. If you want me to be serious?
I know that you were born Jewish, but do you? Like, I don't know, whatever day it is of the week, but do you actually, I mean, do you ever find yourself just worshiping once, just briefly, even briefly, to Obama? Like, do you ever find yourself like, please, Obama, help me here. Let me get this job or something like that?
No, you know how some people say om? I say, oh, Obama.
Is that the way you calm down? Before you go into an audition? That is the worst.
Yes,
that's
why I can't, his name.
What, now
look,
what? What are you working on now? I mean, are you doing more like kids programs? Because that's the one thing that has currency in my house.
If this helps, in the last 2 weeks, I went out for the same kid's show and didn't get the party of the time.
Oh, geez.
And the second audition didn't go for the second part. They brought me back. They said, oh, we liked what he did at the audition. Let's bring him back for another part. That didn't go as well.
Are you doing any Marin show or what?
I haven't heard yet. I'm not the type of person who will beg, but I'm hoping to. That's my whole career.
Wait, you're
I
not?
I hope to do some things.
You're not the type of person to beg?
Well, I'm more of a cajoling guy.
Right, I see.
Does everyone leave your studio?
No.
I usually get big laughs. People have doubled over. Michael? Where's the laughter in the background?
Well, you can't. Matt is here. He's laughing. Michael is gone, but Amber's here. Amber, do you want to just weigh in on what you think about Andy? And Michael's on vacation. I sent him away for a week.
I didn't know that. Nobody tells me anything.
Sorry to disappoint. I'll laugh a little bit louder in the background.
She's snickering.
Also, though, Sam has put a button on our mic now, so you can't hear us laughing in the background without us pressing the button and laughing into the mic now.
That's right.
We don't get paid extra for that.
That's right.
Oh, no. What is he? You're becoming a monster, Sam.
It's true. My real monstrosity is coming out. Now, wait a second. Let me tell you what's going on with Marin. Marin, for the last two seasons, calls me up, says, I'm going to write you into my show this year. Then he calls me from the writer's room when he's like, and he said this is going to happen 2 years in a row now. I'm sitting here with Dave Anthony. We're breaking your story. And then just complete radio silence for like the next 4 months because he's too embarrassed to tell me that they couldn't come up with a story that I could fit into. So he waits until the whole show shoots. And then he's like, oh, yeah, hey, what's up?
Do you think it's one of those, is he doing one of those Ashton Kutcher prank things with you? Is that what it is?
He could be punking me. Yeah, this could be a long-term, long arc of punking. Now, speaking of Ashton Kutcher, is that his name?
Kutcher. Love him to pronounce Kutcher.
What's that, Kutcher?
Why do things crack me up? It cracks me up to say Ashton Kutcher.
Okay. Now, I know you wanted to come on and give a big defense of the torture program, Andy. But I'm more interested in hearing what's going on with this whole big hack of Sony. Now, people aren't sure who it is, right? Some people think it's the North Koreans. Sony's files were hacked into. Nothing was really stolen, but a lot of stuff, embarrassing stuff, released. Anything on you in this? Treasure trove.
Well, no, there's nothing. You could look through. You could scour through my emails, and you will not find any racist bantering, like the comedy team of Rudin and Pascal.
Yeah, tell us what went on with that. I only peripherally looked at it.
Well, you got these two, Rudin and Pascal. Scott Rudin, who is one of the nicest people in show business.
Well, is he hated? What does he do? Who does he work with?
I think he's in the movie Swimming with Sharks. I think it's based on him.
Oh, really? Okay.
He's one of these independent producers. He's like the Harvey, I'm not saying Harvey Weinstein. First of all, there's part of me that says I don't want to jeopardize my film career by going after these people, Sam.
I understand. Boy, this
I don't want to, you know what I'm saying? This is really risky for me. No, he's one of these guys who rip, you know, like one of these guys that they say will rip your head off and throw your body out the window to get you to cut 2 minutes out of the thing.
Okay.
So, but there's nothing more. I don't think any white, I think all white people now are just terrible. These are supposed to be liberal white people.
And wait, what did they do?
So what happens is that there's a big meeting out in L.A. that they're going to, Jeffrey Katzenberg, some kind of breakfast.
Okay.
And look, I know that it's not exciting to have breakfast with Jeffrey Katzenberg. I've been there. I know how you feel. But then they start mocking Obama about because he's going to be at this breakfast, and they're going to say, should we ask him if he wants to produce any movies? And then they go, oh, no, but I bet he loves 12 Years a Slave. I bet he loves Django. I bet he loves Kevin Hart movies. They just worse. You know how Bill Maher, whenever he does Obama, it's Obama, it's like a black guy from the 60s, and Obama's back in the White House going, oh, look, hello, hello there. You have Bill Maher.
That sounds more like the 1860s.
The being in the world plays off of stereotypes from, this is even worse. This is like they're saying, I know that you don't like Obama, Sam.
Me?
Personally.
Personally.
But do you really think of him as somebody who, first of all, why would anybody justify this kind of bantering? But where does it come from? I don't even understand it. That's what they got caught doing.
Really bad sense of humor? I mean, the joke's supposed to be that because he's a black guy, he likes the Academy Award winning 12 Years a Slave?
Yeah.
And the wildly popular Django that people were raving about for months. I don't know who Kevin Hart is, but
he's the comedian.
Yes, you do.
He's a comedian.
He's a comedian. No.
And he's been in movies.
There's also an email.
What movie has he been in?
I don't know, actually.
Right. Okay, there you have it.
But he's most known for his stand-up, actually. He's pretty funny.
Was he in Frozen?
No.
Okay, then I haven't seen him.
Sam. Aren't you supposed to have your finger on some kind of a popular culture pulse?
Why do you think I bring you on?
You don't know anything. You don't know about the Sony leaks. You don't know about Kevin Hart.
I can sing the entire soundtrack to Frozen to you.
That I tried to get through 20 minutes of that movie, and
how many times have you seen Maleficent?
Pardon me?
How many times have you seen Maleficent? Huh?
I don't see.
You know, for a guy who makes so much money in doing these kids shows that you do, one would think that you'd put a little effort into getting a sense of what's going on out there in that industry.
Yeah, I'm not a go-getter in any sense of the word.
Those hacked Sony emails were knocking Angelina Jolie too.
Yeah, I saw that. They were saying that she was a no talent.
Well, what do these people do? What is Amy Pascal?
Well, will you explain to me?
What is Scott Rood? What is his particular skill, Scott Rood?
Well, you explain this to me, Andy, okay? Now, I spent a decent amount out in Hollywood. I sat in multiple meetings with Warren Littlefield. Les Moonves brought me into his office and tried to offer me a deal. These were pretty substantial players. They were head of NBC, head of CBS. I've sat in the room with the head of Fox at the time, and the peeps at ABC. I mean, I had my heyday there. What I never saw, Andy, and never really understood, and maybe it was because of the way I was raised, because my father had quite a bit of a temper when I was growing up, but. What is it that a guy like Scott Rudin, when people say, like, he's scary, like, what is it exactly could he do? He's just going to yell at you?
Yeah. Like, let's say you're his assistant, and I told you, tuna fish is supposed to be. It's that kind of a thing. Did I tell you to be here at 9:45, or did I tell you to be here at 9:48? It's 9:48. It's not 9:45, is it? You're 3 minutes late. That type of thing.
Okay.
People live their life that way.
All right, Chief.
They want something.
I'm 3 minutes late.
Yesterday.
What are you going to do about it? Fire me? Okay. You fire me.
Well, you don't have anything at stake.
What?
Sam.
Are you kidding?
You're not.
What am I going to do? Go back to that podcast I've been working on?
Yeah, but you don't kowtow. People like me and you, we don't kowtow. We're unemployed.
Exactly.
Look, we're not the type of people. You can't push us around. We
That's
have nothing
right.
at stake.
That's right. That's right. We got the fact that we got nothing left to lose backs us up big time, big time. Right?
I couldn't do it. I could not. When they say, like, oh, this person's terrible, but, they get things done, or I don't know, Scott, I can't think of one movie Scott Rudin produced or anything. The thing about this whole thing, though, is that this North Korean leak.
Oh, yeah. So this is all about – I guess I buried the lead. The reason is because there was a movie that is being released now called The Interview with
Seth Rogen and James
Seth
Franco.
Seth Rogen and James Franco. Is Franco funny now? Is that what he's doing, or is that his whole thing? Is he now funny?
You know, he's –
You know he's funny if you have to say, if you have to ask me, is Franco funny?
I don't know. I mean, the only thing I've seen him, I think he's a great actor. I just haven't seen him in a comedy.
He became friends with like Seth Rogen and Judd Apatow, and like so they basically put him in all the movies they could put him in.
Oh, that's the key. I mean, that's the one thing, right, Andy? I mean, that's why your career is where it is, and that's why mine is where mine is that we're not social people, right?
Right, that's true.
I mean,
that's true.
Generally, you rub people the wrong way, and I do the. I'm the same way. And I think the only reason why we can maintain this relationship that you and I have is because it's completely at arm's length.
We have never been in the same room together.
Ever.
It's a phone relationship. And it's a relationship only on your show.
Right. It's got to be completely mediated by thousands of other people listening. And that's the only way we can get along.
The thing is, the main thing is that they need a smaller, I've always said this, they need a smaller stable of actors that they use for these comedy movies. I mean, is Jonah Hill, was he in a movie? How many movies coming out of this weekend is Jonah Hill in? Because I'm not comfortable. I'm not comfortable if Paul Rudd is not playing every role in a movie. That's all I'm saying.
Is it my imagination or have comedies just become so, like, uninteresting?
Everything is wacky. I mean, that's the whole thing. I mean, for this interview, it's like, okay, so maybe they hacked Sony, but what it's worth it for this hard hitting movie, The Interview. We needed to create an international incident so that James Franco and Seth Rogen could do this hilarious, so that somebody could play Kim Jong Un in a movie. This is, at least we went down for the right reasons.
No, but don't you see how funny this is, though? Because it's clear, like, you know, as the writers were sitting around or whatever, the first draft of it was not North Korea, right? It was something that was, like, too hot to handle, right? It was probably, like, you know, Iran or something. And they were like, oh, no, just do it North Korea. Nobody cares about North Korea. Nobody's going to stick up for North Korea.
Yes.
That's why they had to redo the Wolverine movie. You know, what's that called? Where they yell Wolverines. You know what it is.
Red Dawn.
Red Dawn. That's why they had to redo Red Dawn, right? Because they just tried to make it as sort of obtuse as possible. You know,
they originally got Chinese actors, and they were wearing Chinese-type clothing with the Chinese flag on it. And then in post, they basically turned them all into North Koreans because they realized they couldn't sell a movie in China.
Because it's like, oh, North Korea, there's nobody sticking up for North Koreans. It's sort of like they're the you know, this decade's Amish, right? Where, you know, it's not like there's going to be any North Koreans. That was the big thing, right? Where comedians would always make fun of the Amish because they didn't have to worry that any Amish people would ever hear about it or something like that.
Right,
there was
yeah.
No, and
it's
so,
a safe area.
So they write about North Koreans now thinking like, what possible blowback could we get on this?
Well, here's the thing, too. Here's the quality. I haven't seen the movie, and I'm sure it's terrible.
I appreciate
and as always,
you.
Why watch?
Right.
Without, and then I judge now. Watch that. Here's one of the scenes in the movie. And they're like, we want you to go to Korea to take him out. Kim Jong Un. And they go, take him out, like to dinner. That's in the actual preview. Take him out. Oh, you mean like, take him outside? No, we want you to kill him, and then the rest of the movie road trip. Isn't that what the whole thing is? The wacky, oh, did you see Kim Jong-un? And then I'm sure it's a very sensitive portrayal of a North Korean guy dipping into the, how is Jonah Hill going to be as Kim Jong-un in this movie?
That's
all I want to know.
No, he's not playing Kim Jong-un. Although that would probably be funny.
That would have been very
just
funny.
To see him as Kim Jong-un.
Why didn't they just, you know what they should have done? They should have made it Central Korea. Right? Because, first off, 95% of the people who would go see this movie would probably not be aware that there wasn't a Central Korea.
Right, exactly.
Right? I mean,
who's
you know,
gonna go see this?
How many people know, how many people honestly who go into that movie even know that there's a North and South Korea or why it's a North and South Korea? I mean, honestly. So they just call it Central Korea or just call it, you know, take one of the names from the game, the board game Risk. Like it's we're going to Kamchatka or whatever it was.
Well, you know, here's the problem, Sam. The problem is, why can't a movie be funny without it having to be some kind of wacky premise? Can't you just have two people talking? Someone says something funny, the other person tops them. It's over a meal. I mean, I grew up on these movies like Annie Hall and Manhattan. And these movies were about something.
Just Woody Allen movies you grew up on, is what you're saying. Just two. Speaking of a huge variety of actors in those movies.
Okay, Hannah and her sisters. I'm willing to expand it. I've seen a Girl Boy Danny Rose. Look, I'm not limited to one thing.
Right, right. And there was all, like, you know, it was not the same person over and over. I mean, it was the same person over and over again. But if he would have the supporting cast changed every third or fourth or fifth movie.
Right. But the thing is,
I auditioned for him, you know. I auditioned for Woody Allen.
What's that?
I auditioned for Woody Allen.
You have had so many near, what do you call them, near misses?
Yeah.
Or almost?
Yeah, wide misses.
And how was that?
It was one of the more surreal experiences of my life, to be honest with you. Because even as a kid, celebrity was never that much of an issue for me. My cousins were friends with Dwight Evans. And I, you know, grew up and I got a chance to meet him and I was like, said to my dad, you know, I would rather just actually, he gave me tickets so I could see the game.
Who's the name?
He was a right fielder for the Red Sox. That's what I remember. That was like
Dwight Evans?
Yeah. I mean, it's not a big deal
for. Maybe these people were not celebrities.
Dwight Evans was a celebrity in Massachusetts.
I had
a
chance to meet Jerry Lumpy. I don't even know what you're saying.
But the point is. And I've met just about every sort of person I ever contemplated as being remotely my hero. I've had the opportunity to meet in my life. And Woody Allen was the one time where it felt like it was just bizarre. I went to the Beekman Hotel, I think it is, or whatever it is on the Upper East Side, where he has his office. I don't know if that's where he lives or he has his office on the first floor. It's like going to see a doctor, actually, in Manhattan. Sometimes you go to a doctor on the first floor. And they warn you in the sort of, there's a little bit of, it's like a, you're in like a hallway sort of anteroom. And they come out and they say, look, I just want to make it clear. I just want you to know that Woody is very well known for having very brief auditions. He's not even going to have you read. And so I just don't want you to be upset when you leave, basically. And I'm like, no, that's fine. And I think I was aware of that. I think, you know, the casting director had told me, I mean, you're prepared for that type of thing. And it was for Sweet and Lowdown, I think it was. Is that the name of the movie?
Is that the one with Sean Penn?
I think so, yeah. I'm pretty sure that's what it was.
Yeah. That was the Django movie.
So I came in, and I didn't even get to see his entire office. I did see the shag rug, but I was in the sort of the front hallway of the office, and then you take it left, and it goes in and opens up a little bit. And it was multi-leveled, and the casting director and the other people, there was like four or five other people in the room. The casting director was up there sort of overseeing, and he comes up and greets me at the door, and he's introduced to me by one of the casting directors, Sam. This is Woody Allen. Woody, this is Sam Suter, and I'm like, yeah. And, you know, he could almost barely talk. And he talked to me for like, I don't know, it was a 3-minute exchange. I remember he said something to the effect of like, and I can't remember the casting director's name. It's on the end of all of his movies. Thinks you'd be perfect for this role. And I said, I tend to agree. And I don't even know if I was aware of what the role was. And then he said something like literally one other sentence. And all I could think of at the time was like, oh, my God, he's talking to me. Like I've seen him talk, face me and talk. But usually there's also a TV in between us or it's, you know, he's up on a screen. And I just remember thinking, this is the strangest thing in the world because I've seen him do this maybe more than any other person I don't know. You know, because growing up, obviously, I watched a lot of Woody Allen movies, and yet now he's actually addressing me, expecting me to respond. And then it was just like he basically said, "Well, it was really good to meet you," and I said, "It was really good to meet you." I mean, I don't think
I said. Is that what you went with? Oh my god! Just like that? It's really good. Hey, it's really good to meet you. Oh my god! He wanted you to say, "Relaxed." He's looking for someone to say, "Nice to meet you." Relax. Not over the top.
Should I have said? Should I have said like? Yeah, with you, it was
You should have. He's looking for someone. It was probably a role, but was in the role. Someone says, "How are you?" in the part, and he was, and so he's kind of feeding you the line. Right?
Oh God!
And all you had to do.
Now that you say this,
you had to do is, I'm pretty good.
The movie took place in the 1930s, I think, and I think what I should have said was, "It was really Jake to meet you."
You should have.
Isn't that the way they spoke?
Right?
It was really Jake to meet you.
You should have said, "Hey, cut the chin. Hey, cut the chin music, sister." You know, did something from the 30s. What do you know?
Great gams on you.
That's what he was looking for. Haven't you read about how you're supposed to conduct yourself? There's a lot of material out there.
Oh yeah, since that time though, it all came out afterwards. Yeah, I read about all that afterwards.
I only saw a little bit of the shag carpet. Is that a famous thing when he has shag carpet?
I think so.
Yeah, that was a bit weird. I was wondering.
Yeah,
too,
no, his office looks like an office from, or at least at this time it did. Now this was at least, oh gosh, this is 15 years ago, I think, somewhere around there. His office at that time looked like it had not been redesigned since 72, since 1972.
Well, here's what you should have done. You should have gone into your, you should have said, without being didactic. You should have done a really bad Woody Allen impression for him. And said, I see you have shag carpet. Like that. Mm. I mean, mine was pretty good. But you could have gone with a really, I had a similar experience to you, Sam, but this is an even worse experience. I auditioned for that movie, The People versus Larry Flint.
Uh-huh.
So it was the same type of thing. I went to Milos.
I met Milos Forman in Central Park West at his apartment, or Central Park South.
Was Dwight Evans there?
No, Andy Kaufman's brother was there.
Oh,
it was on the callback. I met with Milos for Man on the Moon or whatever it was, and then
that movie where I had to, after that movie, I had to go back to my apartment and watch an actual Andy Kaufman
film to make sure
that I knew, like, remember what it was like.
I know. So wait, so you met Milos Forman? He must have been very disappointed.
Well, I go to this hotel room, and the casting director had wanted a video. It was a video camera he wanted. So he was playing around with the video camera. So he trains it on. I don't know what the hell is supposed to be going on here. All I know is that I think that any situation, whether it's growing up as the youngest child, whether it's a comedy club, I have to make these people happy and laugh. That's all I know. So I'm certainly not being myself. I probably look like a puppet. And so he trains this new video camera on me. He starts training on me. So I start saying, hey, is that your new camera? And he says to me, just relax. That's what he says to me. Just relax.
That's what a dentist tells you.
That's the only acting note he gave me on the way to not getting a part.
Well, it's
just relax.
It's better than him saying, "Don't be so stiff."
Well, he wouldn't have said stiff. He would have said, "What are you, a vaudevillian? What are you doing here?
Could you act better?"
I could tell that if I ever did get the part, he would just say, "Bring it less. Do less now. Do it less now."
Well,
you know what?
As a former director, I can tell you, it's always easier to dial someone down than to dial them up.
Why do you say former director?
Well,
you have a lot of things in the works.
Do I?
I don't know. Between me and you, it's sad. What's going on?
We should. You know what, Andy? I'm going to let you go now. But we should.
Because of the quality of my appearance?
We should maybe talk to each other about putting out like a sad podcast.
It's true. It really is true.
How to alienate friends and destroy business relationships.
See, here's my image of you.
Yeah.
My image of you is, first of all, you're more handsome than me. Well, I've always felt that way.
I feel like that's, but you know.
There's no argument about it. And then I know that you're thinking, yeah, that's not much, Andy, to be more handsome than you. Not really a high bar.
Okay, right. I was going to say. But that's okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Fair enough.
You're not, it's not like you said, I said you're better looking than Rob Morrow.
Okay. Well, when was the last time you seen Rob Morrow?
Northern Exposure.
Right.
The
okay.
Reunion.
Yeah. Okay.
But my image of you is that you are very well adjusted. You are. I think me is the only person who burns bridges. I don't think you burn bridges.
No, you know what? That's the thing is I burn my bridges so quietly that I get no credit for it. You understand? Like some people yeah. burn bridges and they explode them. And then from the shrapnel, what happens is it ignites a fire in their career somewhere else. I, on the other hand, I burn them very quietly. So only the one person who I have a problem with knows they have a problem with me. And there's a lot of
right.
those
See,
people.
Yeah. But so I do it on Twitter. Like I said something about, Seth Rogen. I forgot even the tweet about
yeah, so you get credit for it. You do it on Twitter. What I would do it is I would do it in person or I would do it under with a DM. And I would one would ever know that I've alienated all these people.
Oh, okay. But you're still saying that at the end of the day, both of us are still somehow –
Well, that's why it would be interesting. Exactly. That's why it would be interesting for us to do a podcast because we do the same thing. We just do it differently. We can cover all bases. All right, Andy, do you want to give me a movie recommendation for the weekend?
Yeah, I do. I don't know if I've given this movie before.
The Interview?
And by the way, a lot of people are very excited about my movie picks. I get a lot of great feedback
okay.
about my movie picks.
I bet.
I was in a deli the other week. I said, you're Andy Kindler, right? I said, well, yeah, you know, let's keep it down. I said, it's the guy.
Right.
Let's not make a stir. You go on the Majority Report, right? And you give your movie picks? I said, yes, that is me. That is me. Slums of Beverly Hills.
Slums of Beverly
Unbelievable.
Hills.
Oh, Unbelievable movie.
Nick Nolte? No.
Maybe have I mixed up the two movies? No, this is the one with Alan Arkin.
Okay.
And Natasha Lyonne.
Mm-hmm.
David Krumholtz.
Marissa Tomei.
Okay.
Carl Reiner comes in at the end. Unbelievably hilarious, but a movie that works on many levels. I know that a lot of people think a comedy means that you have to have seltzer bottles and large shoes and pants falling down, and then dramas are people crying. This has both. It's hilarious, and it's also emotional, and it's a third adjective.
All right.
Don't cut my movie review off.
Well, I mean, I'm just a little disappointed because I'm a huge Seth Rogen fan. And he's not in that film. But
Green Hornet. And I meant to say Green Hornet. That is the best superhero. When you think of superhero, when you think of a lilting voice, when you think of a commanding presence, Seth Rogen is the Green Hornet in Green Hornet. Unbelievable movie.
Andy Kindler, Slums of Beverly Hills. I will definitely check it out eventually.
And check me out in the Interview. I'm in the Interview.
Did you? good luck with that. I hope.
Hey, thanks,
I hope you don't.
Hey,
you
this was hacked. The most Shabbat Shalom to you, Sam.
Oh well, thank you. That's very sweet of you, Andy. You too.
You secular Jew.
Yes. Okay.
You heard me.
I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Okay, Sam. Thanks, man.
Bye.
Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Andy. The great Andy Kindler, ladies and gentlemen. All right, we have a Jimmy Reefer Cake song.
Oh, boy.
Let's hear it.
Hold on.
Now, do I remember this correctly? Is this the one that knocks me?
Yes.
Okay.
It's the Reefer Cake versus Sam Cedar, the
infinite
The Infinite Battle.
All right. So Jimmy is mad at me, I think. And so let's hear this. I'm not sure. Maybe he isn't. I'm not sure. I don't know.
You have to give me a second. I forgot to download it.
Wow. Do you know how embarrassing this is for Amber? Like, she actually does, like, real producing on a real show. And to come in...
It would have been fine if he hadn't had to also hold down the button to talk to you.
Yeah,
he would have been okay.
I was getting it, and then I had to hold down the button to talk.
Well, but you know what? The idea would have been to get it before the show.
I was having so much
fun. Or during the hour and a half that has taken place of the show.
Well, I forgot about it during Cliff, and then I was having so much fun during Andy Kindler. Here we go, though. It's ready.
All right, let's hear.
Reefer Cake versus Cedar to the Infinite Battle.
Yeah, so Cedar says, I'm missing the point.
4 years and 100 songs. I don't regret it. I laid out the facts, but tell me, do you get it? The true libertarian label, what you make it? Battle rap your ass, I don't think you can take it. Land of the free, home of the brave. Throw your ass in prison, gonna treat you like a slave. But just trying to do something in the hood. Selling a product that is natural and good. Why don't you flip? Chaos theory, butterfly wings. Will we live the day to see freedom rings? A realization that legalization has a positive impact on the whole nation. Come around to see the importance is great. I saw it. Are you embarrassed to be late? So tell me, do you get the point?
What
you got? What you got, Cedar?
Oh, Cedar got nothing.
All right, there you go. Jimmy Reefer Cake. Yes, I definitely, just to address the song, yes, of course I get the point. Your name is Jimmy Reefer Cake. You want marijuana legalization. I have always supported it. I'm not convinced that it's the panacea to everything that I sometimes feel like you might think it is. But yes, but I did enjoy the song today. Let's go into the better half so that we can you freeloaders, you're only getting an 82-minute show today as opposed to a 45-minute show. Unbelievable. I give and I give and I give.
You're too kind, Sam.
We have to rejigger the show. We can't give people an hour... an hour and 20 minutes for free on Friday. It's crazy.
Stop talking before it's an hour and 21 minutes.
Well, this is all, we're going to put the music down here anyways, right? So I guess less content.
That's true.
Folks, but that's what I need. I need a producer in here who's going to tell me, like, not do that. I mean, you did tell me that, too.
Yeah. You just don't listen.
No. Well, it makes me feel any better. I didn't listen to Amber either.
In fact, the other day, after a long, like, 40-minute interview, you were about to go into another story for freebies, and I am you and tell you, no, enough.
I know.
Enough.
Can't stop. Can't stop. All right.
This guy. What are we going to do with him?
I don't know. Maybe you'll have to, unplug the microphone. Not actually be... I don't know. All right, folks,
you
know how to support this program. The number 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920 is the number. I will take your phone calls. You have a special line open for that moron who contacted me on Twitter. That number is 646.
Jason in Phoenix.
No, it's a new guy.
Another one.
257-3920. Oh, no. Jason was not a... Well, he didn't contact me on Twitter.
Sam got in it this morning on Twitter with a GamerGator.
Some guy was very upset about my GamerGate thing, and but he's in high school, and I don't know if he has his own phone yet. So, but if he does, we have a special number for him. It's 646-257-3920. That is your special line. For the rest of you, 646-257-3920. You can IM me, of course, if you have the app, JordyApp.com. Get the app for your iPad, your iPhone, your iPod,
your Android devices.
Please support the program. If you're listening this long, like if you're a freebie and you're still listening to this, you honestly, Are you really not going to sign up for the show now?
If you're hoping Michael forgets to cut out the members half, Michael's not here this week.
Right. So does Michael do that?
I'm just making it up. All right. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised.
Back in a minute.